Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the groundbreaking award-winning podcast, Rahalastapa, with me, Rich Tang, and my guest, Rob Brydon. Why not go to rahalastapa.co.uk to find out more about this podcast and how you can contribute if you like it lots. Also go to richherring.com/gigs and you can find out if I'm coming on tour somewhere near to you. Why not come along and see it? It's lots of fun. All right, listen to this now. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's been taking pictures of a 4-year-old girl on a toilet. It will be explained. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello. Thank you. Oh, lovely to be back. You're much better than last week's audience. So I was... welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square. Oh, no, shit, it's not called that anymore. Damn. Welcome to Rahalastapa, which stands this week for Richard Herring's Lightning Strikes Twice podcast. More than twice if you listen to most of the questions. Though I was... where's it gone? I was talking to... I had a really good one. Here we go. I was talking to Matt and Luke Goss off of Bros the other day, and Matt from Bros, he calls it Rahalastapa because the letters RHLSTP are important because they personify Richard Herring's podcast. That's what he said. So I don't know if that's gonna catch on. There's been lots going on this week. My daughter has turned 4 this weekend. I've been a parent for 4 years. It's unbelievable. She was on the toilet on the day before her birthday, actually. And she was just, every time she was straining to go to the toilet, her face literally changed colour to this beetroot red.
and it was really making me laugh. She's like the Incredible Hulk. It was seriously like she'd be white and then she'd go, and her face just went red. It was freaky and I was laughing. She said, "What are you laughing?" I said, "Your face is really funny." And she said, "I want to have a picture. I want to see it on a picture." So I then had to take a picture of my daughter sitting, just a face, I'm not sick, on the toilet, so that she would understand what had happened, so she could see her own face. She went, "That's good. I like that. That's good." She said, "Can we print that picture up and stick it on my wall?" And I said, "No, you can't really do that, because if someone sees that, they'll say, why is your daddy taking a picture of you on the toilet? That's..." And she said, "Well, we can't fib. Why don't we just say that it was, look how red my face is. That's a..." Idiot. "And I'll get sent..." I told her I'd get sent to prison. She said, "We don't have to fib." 4 years old, unbelievable. This quite interesting thing happened this week. Well, I suddenly started getting loads of emails from people in Mexico. genuinely. And I don't know how old any of these people are, but obviously someone in an English class, might be kids, it might be adults, I don't know, because they're really good at English, these people. They're Mexican people, and they've all been emailing me about the same thing. So this is from Diego. I won't give his full name. No idea if he's a child or a grown man. "I am writing this as a task on my English class. I honestly haven't the minimum idea of who you are." Well, that's actually the incorrect way of saying that. "But I just hope that I'm writing this letter to a great person." You are. "The question they've all answered is, if you had to live in the burrow or nest of an animal for a week, which animal's home would you live in?" That's what... this person wants to live in a cave. "I take the bat as an example. The advantage is a shelter from rain in a very silent environment." Silent, not a very good teacher. So amazing, the English in this. "Disadvantage, it's cold and can be handled with a good jacket and a fire." They've thought it through. "I wish you never read this, but in case you do, I offer an apology." So don't email it to me then, mate. So I think their teacher's called John. I think he's from Churchill School. That's what they've been telling me. Fatima says, I would live like a panda for a week because they're friendly and protected. And she goes on about their friendliness. Long email, their food variety. The areas where pandas stay are fooled. Disappointing. "Of bamboo sticks and have a lowland meat location, though, could stay in the ground instead of being at the top of bamboo trees. Answering the question makes your mind blow." She's good. And Rodrigo, who's put as the subject heading, "Yours the Beaver Master." I think Rodrigo knows what he's doing. I'm not coming. The English is... I don't know why these kids... It feels like these kids are like in Groundhog Day in Mexico and have been taking English lessons for an eternity, and this is the last day, the day before it moves to the next day, because the English is so good in these. Thinking, why are any of these kids or adults taking lessons? "I write to you believing in the new fantasy of becoming a beaver master." It goes on for a long time. There's a lot of stuff. And in the end, it says, "I could prove myself so useful, they might even make me their leader and turn me into a beaver master, venerated and adored. They could build a church in my name, adoring my ever so unusual hands and tools, turn me into the new Jesus." I mean, that's so like something I'd write. There's lots of just genius Mexican. "I hope you keep thinking of comedic ways of making people's everydayness more enjoyable." And let yourself down at the end, mate. "I assure you my teacher was pleased to be lazy for a day." I haven't emailed them back, but I will. there's about 20 of them. Anyway, look, we've had fun so far, but now it's time to move on to no fun. We're going to have no fun from now. We are going to move on to our guest this week. He's probably best known for appearing on the Gus Honeybun Birthdays on Westwood TV when he was 2 years old. That's why that's why you're probably here tonight, though that was probably a different name. He was also, of course, you might be here because he was the man in crowd in First Night. You might not know, but he was the first villager in A Knight's Tale as well. He loves being villagers in knight-based films. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome Rob Brydon! Welcome, come in. sit down. Make yourself at home.
Now, I'm not in A Knight's Tale.
Are you not?
That's an anomaly on Wikipedia.
Wow.
But I was in First Knight. I played First Villager.
And what, do you remember what you had to do?
Oh, good. Of course I do. I mean, this was my first film. This was the beginning of my, you know, film career.
Yeah.
Is how I thought of it then. I couldn't get arrested. This is 1994, and I couldn't get seen by casting directors. So Dougray Scott was a very good friend of mine, the actor, Scottish actor. And Dougray knew everybody. So he persuaded Mary Selway, who was the doyen of casting, gone now, died, doyen of casting directors, to see me. So I went to Twickenham Studios and went into this, to her office, and she sat there. First Knight, she was casting. Richard Gere, Sean Connery, John Gielgud. It was a big thing, you know. Now, all the big parts are gone, but I think as a favour for Dougray, she says, she looks at the list of parts. She says, now, what do we have for Rob? And there's my CV. And there were marauders in the film, baddies, and there were villagers, goodies. So she looks at things, she goes, marauder? And her assistant sees my height on my CV and says, 5'7". And she goes, no. So I auditioned for the part of First Villager. And I often say that the collective noun, is it, for actors is an humiliation. Because I had to stand in front of a video camera, and these were the lines, because I was about to get shot with a bow and arrow. I had to go, now please, I beg of you. And I got the part. And I went and did it, but the lines were cut the day before we shot it. I was in Waitrose in East Sheen, because I was already doing quite well with my voiceovers, you see. I mean, I didn't need the work. And I was there, and my agent at the time phoned and said, I got some bad news. They've decided to cut your lines, because there are maybe three lines. Do you still want to do it? Well, of course, it's bloody Sean Connery, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I did it, and I'm terrible in it. If you see it, I'm overacting. I look like Griff Rhys-Jones has drunk too much coffee, and I quiver every time it comes on.
Oh, I must check it out. What about Gus Honeybun? Remember being on Gus
Honeybun? Yes, Gus Honeybun, for people who don't know, that was...
Everyone knows who Gus Honeybun is.
That's Westward Television, was the ITV franchise in the west of England, and you would also get it in South Wales, depending on which way you... Well, you,
yeah,
you would have
I was in Cheddar, and yeah. We got HTV,
that's right,
Wales,
yeah.
Or West.
That's
well.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was Westward, and he was a little cuddly rabbit,
yeah.
And he would sit with a presenter, and they'd read out your birthdays.
Yeah.
And they read it out on my birthday, and all my aunties were there. And the minute they mentioned my name, all my aunties went, "It's Robert! It's Robert! It's Robert!" And I didn't hear a bloody thing.
What did Gus do for you?
Was it he hopped. He would do bunny hops.
But he could do lots of things. He could wink. He could do magic button was what you wanted. He pressed the magic button.
Oh yeah, and the kind of chroma key thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I'd forgotten about that.
Who was the host when you were two? Was it Fern Britton?
No,
used to do it?
No, it was the guy. It was the bloke. Alan.
Grey haired guy.
He was bald, wasn't he? I remember as being bald. Alan. I want to say Honeybun, but they weren't related. Maybe it was his dad.
He might have been to begin with.
He'd had a thing with a rabbit. I don't know.
I'm quite obsessed with puppets for lots of reasons.
Hartley Hare?
Hartley Hare, yeah.
One of my first impressions was Hartley Hare.
Can you do it now?
Peek, peek.
The problem with this is most of these people would not have been born when Hartley Hare was less on TV.
It's not going to stop me doing my act.
I was... I was in the gym today, and there was a guy...
What were you doing there? Had you lost something?
I was doing some running.
Oh, you just got lost? You'd lost your way?
I was doing some running on the running machine.
Were you?
And I went into the toilet.
Just out of interest, what setting was it on?
9 kilometres an hour. I'm a very good runner. And I went into the toilet to do... I was going to do a wee.
Of course you were.
There was a man at the in the toilet just really spraying like cologne onto himself. Like, loads.
No, that's not good.
Really loads. But I wanted to go to him, splash it all over. But he was about 23.
So he wouldn't have known what he was.
He would have known what I was doing. And that's the terrible thing about becoming an older... Remember Splash It All Over? You remember, don't you? That was like Henry Cooper had stepped out of the TV. Wasn't the way I did that. One of us is a very good impressionist. We might do an impressionist off like Splash It All Over. Sometimes Barry Sheen would come in, wouldn't he?
Kevin Keegan was
anyway,
in as well.
That just made me think of that. No, I was going to say, I've written the intro to Zippy's autobiography.
I'm out of my league here.
That's the circles I move in. I want to, but you, and there's another puppet based thing I want to talk to you about, which is your fear of Basil. You had a fear and obsession with Basil
Brush.
Yeah,
it's true. I loved Basil Brush. But as a kid, I was also at a strange sort of fear of him. And my dad used to say to me, I'd say, well, what would happen if Basil comes to the house? And my dad. And my dad would say, don't worry, if he comes to the house, I will get hold of him and I will throw him over the back wall. And I had a Noddy, I had a figure of Noddy. And we used to call the box room the Noddy room, maybe because he was kept there. And I was in there once and the knob, stop it. The knob came off in my hand at the door and I couldn't get out and I was shouting and I got hoarse and it was traumatic. So I've had a lot of puppet base.
I've got some puppet-based trauma. I don't want to go into it. But I am...
Do you think with... Oh, goodness, no, I was going to say something dreadful. I stopped myself. There we are. Carry on.
Well, I would say Basil Brush, you know, it was good you were fearful of him because he was a 70s entertainer. So you had the right instincts. But I think the thing with Basil Brush, if he did abuse any young foxes, they'd all be dead by now. That's the beauty of being a fox.
I did interview Basil Brush.
They don't have a long lifespan, so they won't be fine.
I became a radio presenter in the beginning of my career for Radio Wales, and I interviewed all sorts of people. And Basil Brush, the original guy, I did Basil Brush on the telephone, and so it's down the line, and he becomes Basil. And it was a thrill, because he was talking like that. Hello, Mr. Rob. Hello, hello. Come on. And he did, and he would, I remember on the
first... It's a good impression, young people. That was amazing.
Yeah, it's
that
good.
Was really
yeah.
good.
He goes,
that was a really good impression.
And he did,
he
did a poem. He did something he'd always do. The girl stood on the Burden Bridge. Her leg was all a quiver. She gave a cough. Her leg fell off and floated down the river. Ooh. And when we did the first trip... we're in the restaurant in the very first one. I'm running out of people to do, and I did a bit of that. And I said, come on Mr. Steve. And you could see him getting livid, you know, because he felt this was beneath us. And when Michael Winterbottom would come in between takes, he'd just walk away going, do more Basil. And you see Steve going, urgh.
And I wonder what the Wild Mandango was. You mentioned you had a character called the Wild Mandango in your...
I don't know, it was just sort of I don't know what that was, but my friends remember it more than I do. Like a sort of kind of savage. And I would run around. It was a bit like that guy in the Wacky Races, the one with the club.
Oh, yeah, the club.
A bit like that. And it gave me an excuse to chase girls, you know. But different times.
Do you remember Bailey's Comets? Because no one else is. It was like Wacky Races, but they were on roller skates.
No.
No one remembers it.
I remember the Double Deckers.
Yeah, everyone remembers the Double Deckers.
She does.
Yeah. I watched an episode of Bailey's Comets on YouTube, so it did exist, and I didn't make it up. So, there we go. Stuart Lee wanked me off with the ventral wisdom. It'll come out eventually. That's why I'm obsessed with that. Oh, by the way, my mum and dad, I was with my mum and dad yesterday because they were at my daughter's birthday party and they wanted to say, send you their regards and say how much they both like you. Didn't say anything to David Morrissey. But I don't know if they're big Walking Dead fans, Red Riding Trilogy fans, but...
They love a cruise. They love a cruise.
They do love cruises.
There we are. I must say it's nice to be off that ship.
They're going for a cruise for their gold, their diamond wedding. I got the whole story yesterday.
Well, that's nice. Where are they going?
They're going round Great Britain.
Round Great Britain? Is that what I sweat all blood around, for to persuade people to go around Britain?
They're in a brand new... I shouldn't
frame of
on,
mind.
I shouldn't say this on a podcast, but I don't think any people who go on cruises will be listening. But it's my mum and dad's gold, diamond wedding anniversary this year. So it's been married for 60 years, and they were together for another 9 years before they got married.
Wow, that's something. Wow.
There's this new cruise liner. I don't know about cruises. You might know what it is.
Something of an expert.
It's the inaugural journey of this. They don't want to go too far from the land, I guess. In case
they want to always be able to see the land, just in case.
So they managed to ring up and say it's our diamond wedding. It was all full, and they said, "Oh, we have got one that we can do." They said, "My mum said, but isn't there a..."
Really?
There's a waiting list, they said, for you guys. You can have it. So screw you, other old people. They have morgues on these things, you know, because someone always dies. If you get old, quite a good idea is just to stay on the ship. That's what people do, right? Old people stay on the ship.
Well,
it changes over, they stay on.
Oh, yeah, people, you know, that's true. There are people who just keep going. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So they don't have to pay for an old folks' home, and they're on a beautiful... The food's very good, apparently.
I read a thing about this, that it actually can work out cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, people who go and spend the summers, winters abroad can actually work, depending on where you are, not if you're at the Ritz, but you can be somewhere and it's cheaper than being here. Yeah. And it's the same on cruises and ships. Some people just stay on.
I mean, I'm going to encourage my parents to do that, because if they go on a home, I have to go and visit them, right?
but they're never going to be that far from the shore. You can visit them quite easily. Just get a dinghy and row.
Newcastle. We're stopped off in Newcastle. Ooh. Which is very nice, but, you know, you can get a train there. Good. Anyway, they sent their regards.
Please give them my very best.
I will. And your dad is Howard Jones. I never knew that. That's very exciting.
Right. Yeah. So in the 80s, when Howard was... Howard Jones was doing What Is Love and stuff. That would get a little chuckle, you know, with my friends. Yeah. Less so these days.
Yeah, no, I did a show called What Is Love anyway, and there's a new one came up. Then he had a way, did What Is Love, so people thought it was that. So, you know, you can keep things current. You have a very interesting...
Are you a member of the gym? I mean, do you go...
I've actually lost one stone this year. So
I think you found it again, didn't you?
I have it. I've cleared a stone, whole stones. You don't want to know what that is about, Rob. We might be friends. I won't tell you about that for a while. So you've got in. It's an interesting rise to fame,
isn't it?
It really is, because it did. You haven't really done anything else, I don't think, apart from entertainment-based stuff.
Yeah,
but you did like lots of voiceovers early on, radio early on. You worked on a home shopping channel. I wish I'd seen. I must have seen
it. It's on YouTube. I wish it wasn't.
Oh, was
but,
it?
But there's some bugger as
you could probably get it taken down.
Oh, I know, but you know that would all... I just know that whoever it was that has this tape, probably somebody that worked on the show, is probably just chuckling to themselves. Oh, I'll put this on. So no, I won't. It's with things like that, it was just very funny, because we were talking before the show. You know, I grew up in Port Talbot, and I was very naive. You know, I didn't grow up quick. I grew up slowly, and I was the oldest sibling, so I think that has an effect on, you know, I wasn't being exposed to older things, mm-hmm. you know, so I stayed young a long time. And I went to drama school, wanted to be an actor, particularly comedy, and... then got a job on the radio just by chance, became an early morning DJ, you know, really mediocre, inane. Christopher, Lady in Red, Traffic and Travel, one of those guys, you know. But I enjoyed it for a while, and then I got sacked from there. And
why did you get sacked, Rob?
Just a new editor came in, Rich.
And
that's what happens, Will.
Yeah. We want to... I know.
Are the patron saint of... You know, but it happens in any creative organization. People start fearing for their livelihoods when a new person comes in, because to make their mark, they've got to have their own people, and they've got to make space. But I always remember I had an agent in London back in those days. Sorry, in Cardiff. And she phoned me up. I was in bed one afternoon, the way you did when you were in your 20s, yeah. You know. And she said, I've got you an audition in London. Well, my mind raced. Is it theatre? Is it film? Maybe television? And it was Sky had just started up and they were doing a shopping channel. And I thought, well, London, you know. And you do, you're living in Cardiff. The thought of getting to London, it's like going to Jupiter, you know. And I'm serious, I'm not exactly, it's true, you know. And you get used to, once you've got something, you go, oh, yeah, but you know, I think back now, I thought, London. So I came up, and not far from here, the audition was off Oxford Street. And you had to sit there and just improvise and sell something. So I sold my sock, and I was quite good at it. And they gave me the job, and I did it for a year, and I was earning the most money I'd ever earned. So, and I was in London, and I thought, well, this is it now. Now I'm in London. But of course, nobody is going to want to know if you're a shopping channel presenter. They're not going to take you seriously. But in the long term, I do think you, if you can go on to doing what you want, you learn a hell of a lot. And I don't know anybody else who has the same career path no. as me. So you become, there's something special about that. You know, you haven't just come up doing provincial theatre, a little bit on Emmerdale, a bit on Holby, and then a bit more, and then you get your break.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that, I mean, you obviously always wanted to do this, and your family were very encouraging for you to
super encouraging, business. Yeah, yeah.
It was that difficult period. I mean, sort of, was it Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels that was the thing that tipped it over?
Well, it Lock, Stock only tipped it over, only in terms of what it prompted me to do. I couldn't get arrested. You know, I was trying to. People kept saying to me, "Oh, you're very funny. Oh, you're very good. You're very funny." And I thought, well, but I can't get anywhere. And I remember, by now I had an agent in London, and I would get the odd little sitcom. I did a few episodes of a Russ Abbott sitcom. Lovely, lovely bloke, really tried to help me and encourage me along. Another one with Gwen Taylor, a bit of that. Anyway. There's a film being made. There's a guy called Guy Ritchie. You've got to go and meet him. And I went and met him. Never heard of him. Obviously, he was unknown. To play the traffic warden in Lock, the guy that gets beaten up, you know, and put in the back of the van by those Mockney monkeys. And I do it. And then, about a few months later, you start to hear, this film's quite good. I bumped into somewhere in Wardour Street, because I was again doing the voiceovers. I bumped into Stephen Moyer, you know, who did that vampire show not long ago.
Oh, yes,
he's doing very well now. Yeah. I'd been in a hat trick thing with him, and we bumped into each other in the street, and he said, hey, that film you're in, hey, it's going down very well. Tom Cruise had a private screening of it in Hollywood. You go, oh my God, this is incredible. I'm in something that's going to be successful. So anyway, it comes out. And what did change things for me was I used to buy Empire magazine. I used to worship at the altar of film, right? It was like film, film, film. And they reviewed it favorably. And they mentioned me. I mean, I'm in it for 5 minutes or less. And it said, blah, blah, blah. And an extremely unlucky traffic warden, Robert Bryden. And I remember being on the Upper Richmond Road on the way to Pizza Express, reading that in the street, and I remember, wow, I'm in Empire. But I thought, quite, you know, cannily, I thought, I can use this. I always remember Alexei Sale was asked years ago, are comedians intelligent, smart? He said, not necessarily, he said, but they are possessed of a rat-like cunning. And I think that's true. Yeah. I really do. The ones that succeed.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, I can do something. I can do something with this. I get that. And he's not here to defend himself. That's a shame. So I thought, I can do something with that. So I had a character that I'd done on the radio called Keith Barrett. And I knew that was a good, strong character. So using the money that I'd made from voiceovers, I rented, see, it'd be different now, you do it on your phone, rented a video camera, right?
Right.
Shot four sketches, one of them in a car, and it went on to become Marion and Jeff, three other characters, with my best friend, he came up with me and filmed it, rented an edit suite,
wow. anywhere.
I mean, you could edit it on your phone now, yeah. Right? And then rented a dub, right? And then went to a printer's and designed a cover for the VHS called An Extremely Unlucky Traffic Warden. And on the back, I put, fresh from his breakout role, all that bollocks, you know, right? And Rob Ryan, here he is, da-da-da. And so now I've got these VHSs. I think I'm on my way. When people see this, things are going to change. And I sent them out in jiffy bags. And then about 2, 3, 4 weeks later, they would begin the zombified walk back to my house. And they would come. You'd hear in the morning the letterbox being forced open. And then you'd hear the manila against the thing. And then... And you go, oh, that's my tape being returned. And it was very disheartening. But I'd been at college with a guy called Hugo Blick. And Hugo was an actor, but he'd now become more involved in writing, worked at the BBC. And I knew he was at the BBC. But I couldn't, in doing comedy, he was in a show called Operation Good Guys. He was involved in the writing of that, which had won at Montreux and everything. But I couldn't bring myself to send the tape to him because if he rejected it, that would be awful. Because everybody else was, right? But I thought to myself, and this is where luck and synchronicity play a part, I thought if I were ever to bump into him, I could casually give it to him, you know? And I was at the BBC one day, White City, because I used to, for a while, I was the guy that said, and with Match of the Day at 10, that's Saturday night on BBC One. There's trouble at Holby at 8. At 9, Pierce Brosnan has a recipe for death. And with Match of the Day at 10, that's Saturday night. So I used to do that. And I can remember it so vividly. This would have been 98 or 99, I think. And I had done my little voice, and I'd come out, and I'm walking. Now, the BBC was a big donut-shaped building, circular, so you could walk round and round the corridors. And I swear to God I'm not exaggerating. I thought to myself, wouldn't it be good if I bumped into Hugo? And at that second, he walked round the corner. Thousands of people worked there. And I went, like Kramer, you know. And I was lost. Seinfeld. And I went, hello. He went, oh, what are you doing here? I said, oh, and he said, we're going to have a drink. So we go and have a coffee or something. And I didn't have the nerve to give him. I didn't want the rejection, afraid of rejection.
Yeah.
Afraid of rejection. It's in my bag down there. And the tape is going, what about me? What about me? Anyway, I gave it to him. Said, look, have a look at this. There's nothing to us here. And off I went into town to do another voiceover. And I'm in a cafe in town and my mobile goes. And he says, and I put Bloody Keith as the last character, idiot. Right, he was clearly the best one. And he said, I like the last one. Why don't you come in and we'll talk about it? So I went in. We hit it off straight away. Start coming up with this backstory and what we can do. Da, da. We ended up making a pilot and made the series. And my life changed.
It's amazing, but those sort of things are amazing. I mean, Sanjeev Bhaskar was kind of quite similar when he was talking about his sort of break into doing Goodness Gracious Me. And it was just sort of discovered, you know, that then they almost tossed, I think they tossed a coin whether they're going to go to a show or not. And so that kind of thing where it's literally someone giving it, you've made the tape.
It's good luck. You do need luck. And people say, you know, the harder I work, the luckier I get. That's true, you know. But I had good fortune that I just bumped into him then. And then I knew Julia Davis because I'd done improv with her in Bath. And she started working. She came to London. Straight away, she's working with the best people. She's working with Chris Morris, right? She's working with Pete Bainham. She's working with Steve Coogan. Now, that's what I wanted to do because, like me, he'd started doing voices.
That's it, yeah, I was going to say.
And I thought, oh, you know, and now he's doing character comedy. You know, I just thought, well, if he can do it, you know. Not in a, if he can do it, but, you know, but in a, well, if he can do it, you know, maybe I can, because he did a similar sort of background, you know. And I read that, like me, he'd auditioned for RADA and had failed to get in, and I thought, oh, another thing there, you know. So she worked with him. Yeah. She went on his tour, her and Simon Pegg, right, doing that. And I remember the first day of the rehearsal, I phoned her up. What's he like? I asked that question, you know, it was such a fun, what's he like? So she gave this tape to him.
Oh, right.
So that was another thing then that helped it. So again, really lucky, you know, really lucky to have that connection.
But you were working—that's what is quite interesting. You, as a teenager, you were working with Ruth Jones already. You met Ruth.
I was at school with Ruth. Yeah,
there's a picture of you and Ruth and Julia all in, doing improv.
That's a little bit later. So Porthcawl Comprehensive, we had a fantastic drama teacher, Roger Bunnell. We do a musical every year, Guys and Dolls, Sweet Charity, Carousel. That's where I met Ruth, about 14, 15 years old. Yeah. You know, we hit it off straight away. We did Guys and Dolls together. Stayed in touch with her. She joined that improv group that I joined, and that's where I met Julia then. So three of us were in that. And then when Julia and I did Human Remains, we gave a part to Ruth. Very, very funny she was in it as well. So I've known a lot of these people for a very long time.
It's all Wales. Everyone knows each other in Wales. You were at school with Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, I didn't know her, though, but she's younger than me, but I...
Very small Wales, isn't it?
It is small. I mean, it's a funny thing that I'll sometimes get people, do you know a chap called the Wellin lives near... I'm like, well, of course I don't. We don't all know each other. And yet, more often than not, it turns out we do.
Yeah, I do.
I'd never met Catherine. I keep, whenever I'm on interviewed or something by paper, they always say, is it true you once stole Catherine Zeta-Jones' dinner money? And it's just this dumbass story that when I was leaving school, I was coming to school one morning, her mother was coming out and she said, oh, I've forgotten to give her money. Would you give it to her, Rob? I said, okay. And then I forgot and I spent it. And that's the story, right? So I'd never met her. And about 10 years ago, when she won the BAFTA for Chicago, we were at the BAFTAs and we're at the meal afterwards, and I'd had a few drinks, and somebody from whoever it was who made that film, knew that I'd been at school with her, came over and said, you're at the thing, you want to meet Catherine? And I thought, well, all right, yeah, crack in. So she was stood over there with Michael Douglas, like royalty. And there was a queue to compliment her. There was a queue to go up and say hello. And I joined the queue, right? So because I was a bit drunk, so I wandered over. And I'm thinking, right now, don't make an ass of yourself now. Just say something nice. We went to a school called Dumbarton. It was a little private day school. Very, very, very lovely, very loving, caring school. With a head teacher. There was Mr. Thomas and there was Mr. Allard, his son Allard Thomas. He went on to become the headmaster. Mr. Allard, important for the story. So I'm stood at the back of the queue and I can hear her up ahead, and she's got that kind of American twang. So people get to her and they say, oh, well done, Catherine. Wonder. And she's going, thank you very much. And then I get a bit closer and I can hear, thank you very much. I'm thinking, oh, no, don't argue it up now, Rob. And I can hear, thank you very much. Finally, I'm there. And I say, well done on the BAFTA. And she says, thank you very much. And I say, I went to school at Dumbarton. And she went, really? She said, I saw Mr. Allard yesterday.
Well, you're not tempted to give her a lunch money back. That's why I don't say his... His 55p.
You've got to hang on to that cash, Rich.
You never know how things are going to turn out. Let's ask you an emergency question. I'll ask you a new one from the back. Some people have been cheating and learning the stuff already.
I've memorised everyone.
You've memorised every answer. Well, this is a school-based one. What is the weirdest reason you ever skived off school? This is a new question that I've... Because I didn't want to make tea and coffee in home economics, so I pretended to be ill. And this is quite interesting. I've talked about it three times. It's not that interesting for people at home because they've heard it. But I had the same. I think you and I are similar in that we both wanted to stay as kids as long as possible, I think, really. So yeah. You didn't drink, and well, I didn't want to drink tea or coffee.
I don't know if I wanted to, but I certainly didn't want not to. I wasn't actively going, but I just did. So and also, I don't think I ever skived off
school.
Never
skived off.
I wasn't that kind of kid.
I wasn't, but occasionally I did.
No, I tell you what is funny is you sometimes get asked, you do any ever steal anything as a kid? Ever do any shoplifting? And a lot of people, well, just the what did you ever break the laws as a kid? And a lot of people go, oh, just the usual thing, a bit of shoplifting, you know. And I go, what, the usual thing? A bit of shoplifting? I didn't do a bit of shoplifting. Do you find that people often say that? Well, we used to nick things from Woolworths, you know. No, I did not.
I waited till I was in...
I would never have stolen from the pick and
mix. I started shoplifting when I was about 24.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I still shoplift now.
No, well, that's not good. That's not good.
Trying to go backwards. I only take pick and mix. They're not going to attempt sending you to prison for that, are they? But I've had about probably 500... It's really expensive. It's worth more than gold in weight, isn't it? If we think about pick and mix per sweet. Get a few of one of those every time. I haven't done it for a little while. What is the most unusual thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire? Come on, you must have got one.
All right, let me think. What sort of answers do you get to
lots
these questions?
Lots of exciting, interesting...
Do you interview people with good memories?
It's a difficult question. You won't have been asked before.
I don't think I've ever rooted around in the embers of a bonfire.
Or just like in a fireplace.
I look at the bonfire, I enjoy the bonfire, I leave the bonfire. I don't got to go, now let me see what's going on here.
I found a cat in the embers of a bonfire.
Why were you looking?
Because it was going...
Oh, it was alive.
It was burnt. It was my cat, Oscar. We adopted it and looked after it.
Oh, well, fair enough. Okay, fair enough.
We saved its life, sir, yeah.
All right, well,
I'm not saying I'm a hero. I was 4 years old. It wasn't that much to do with me.
I could say to that, but you see, that's you cleverly moulding your own spirit. I could say to you, what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you with a sledge and a ladder? Right? And you're going to sit there and go, well, I don't know, Rob. I mean, I don't think... What a stupid question. And I'll say, well, Rich, when I was young, I put a ladder, an aluminium ladder, at a 45-50 degree angle to a wall with the hooks, and this was the mistake, at the bottom of the ladder. And I put a plastic sledge at the top, and I thought, hey, roller coaster. And I went down, and as I got to the bottom, I heard... And I looked down, and the side, it was a Sunday, so my best trousers, the side of my trousers were flapped open. And I thought, oh, that's a shame, Mum will be cross. And then I looked closer, and the side of my leg had flapped open. And it was like something from a biology textbook. And I nearly passed out. But you don't have any stories with ladders.
I'm going to ask that one from now on. I'll ask that. I'm going to ask David Morrissey. He'll never know it's coming. That story is in your autobiography, which I was listening to on audiobook on the drive down here.
You listened to the audiobook?
And that bit, Nathan, I nearly crashed the car feeling sick at that bit. So I'm very squeamish. So apologies to anyone at home who is now. But, oh, God, that audiobook made me feel sick. I'll listen to you on a podcast and said, oh, no, he's done it again. Because that's me, I now feel sick. Let's have a look what else I've got for you on the proper questions. Let's have a look at the proper questions. This would be a good place to put in an advert.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You put in one of my old ones.
You're from Baglan.
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 Yeah.
Did you ever meet the Harmonels Jazz Band, winners of the 2007 World Jazz Band Championships Division 2?
Ah, no.
Okay. They broke up in 2011.
Did they?
Yeah, but they had a great 2007.
It was a good year for them.
Well, World Championships Division 2, that suddenly is not as good, is it? You've won the World Championships of Jazz Bands Division 2. How big's Division 1, mate? 500 bands.
I would say play the room you're in and enjoy it for what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, but no, I don't know them. No.
Why didn't you drink alcohol until you did when you met Catherine Zeta-Jones?
So it was by then. Yeah, with the gay abandon.
That's interesting. But similarly, no, I don't think it's unusual to be nervous about approaching girls when you're a teenage boy.
Yeah, but I didn't have that. I must have been given a drink, you know, as like a young teen. First of all, didn't like the taste. Had quite a limited palate, you know, of what I thought was acceptable. You know, I didn't eat a lot of stuff. Didn't like the taste and didn't make the connection between being a bit drunk and success with girls.
Yes.
You know, because I would be at this Christmas disco and I'd see blokes, positively Neanderthal men... Because I was always, oh, he's very witty, Rob, he's funny, he's lovely, isn't he? But I'd never had the confidence then, this is with the girls, to try and kiss them for fear of rejection. And I'd be stood at the side and it'd be, so this is Christmas, and what have you done? And they'd be over each other. And how the hell is he managing that? And it's because he was pissed. But I never did it. And then I got to an age in my 20s. And what used to happen was the rugby blokes would go, people used to say to me, but didn't they bully you or make fun of you for it? It was the opposite. Oh, fair play, Rob, I admire you. I mean, incredible, you don't drink. I go, somebody is in. I used to get that a lot from these Neanderthal kind of types.
Then I'm
in my 20s and I thought, well, now it would be odd if I started drinking. That'd be strange. But then I got to my 30s and that was when I thought, I'd quite like to actually. It'd be quite nice way to unwind.
Yeah.
And that was when I began. Please help me.
You brought me a bottle of whiskey, which was very kind of you backstage.
Yes, but, I did. A little present, you know.
Yeah, it was very nice.
A little bit, just manners, really. It's just what it is.
It is manners.
Just manners.
Wish I bought you something as well.
You could send something if you
I
want.
I might
That's
send
fine.
Something on to you.
Hi, Rob. Forgot to give you this. Thanks for doing the show, mate. It led it down great.
I'll send you a picture of my daughter restraining to go to the toilet if you like. I'll just text that to you. You've got that on you. That's if it's someone else's daughter on you for that's wrong, isn't it? It's amazing. Great having kids, isn't it? So you do impressions, I understand.
One or two.
I'm fascinated with this because, like, well, this is what people would do with impressions. You did a whole Ken Bruce show.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
You were Ken Bruce.
I enjoyed that.
And pulled that. And you did people not
some people. I mean, most people. Most people are going to realise either he's very ill, he's having a breakdown.
That's a hard job.
Some people didn't.
No.
I enjoyed that. I did enjoy that. The whole show on April Fool's Day.
Right.
It's a very easy voice for me to do. It's quite close to my own register and everything. And I really enjoyed it. It was great.
It's interesting with those guys. I listen to Ken Bruce a lot, and I like Ken Bruce.
He's great. He's
but,
fantastic.
But, you know, he's hit a little pattern, hasn't he, of the way he talks and the things he says. So
I feel you're queuing me up. So I'm not going to be churlish. I'm not going to be churlish. I always do that when you've been interviewed and they start mentioning it. You just sit there going, yeah. Oh, come on, Rob. Play the game.
Let me do mine first. Let's do an impressions of
our. All right, okay, all right.
Hello, I'm Gimbris.
I thought you were doing Benny Hill when he used to go,
hello, viewers. Okay,
that's uncanny.
Yeah.
It's like he's in the room against his will. Anyway, talking like that, 88 to 91 online on digital. Oh, the hell! Traffic and travel coming later. Katrina and the Waves are working on sunshine. Friday night is music night. Thank you, Chris. Jeremy Vine.
Mine. That's a pity applause.
They're clapping for you. They just waited politely till I'd finished.
Does Ken Bruce earn enough that he could pay you to go in and do his?
Well, I don't know how much he earns or what I charge.
What would you do?
I'd like to think he doesn't.
He must get a bit after all these years.
Whenever I'm there, if I'm going on another show, I always pop in and say hello to him. Yeah, yeah. He's a nice guy.
He's a nice chap.
Yeah, wonderful guy. Richard Herring. Right there.
That's what he says. That's what he says when he sees me. I bumped into him in a bar in Manchester. Oh, Richard Herring. I thought, oh, you know who I am. That's weird.
Richard Herring, wonderful to see you. Stop going to the gym, I see.
You should have seen me last year. Now, I do want to ask you about the trip a little bit, but it's a very specific bit of the trip I want to ask you about.
All right.
When you were in Pompeii...
Yes.
You saw one of the tragic victims of... Yes. Bombay in a box.
Yes.
And you decided to do his voice as the.
I did my acclaimed small man in a box voice. My acclaimed. A number of people have said to me, oh, I love that thing to do. And it's such a dumbass, stupid, worthless trick. And I go, oh, thank you very much. And they really told you, like, you've just done King Lear or something. And it is literally.
It's good, but is it appropriate?
Oh, look, they're dead. Their families are dead. Who's going to be offended?
I'm very offended.
Were you related to that person?
I probably am. We're all related to people from that far ago.
Funny thing from that episode of the trip was, in America, it's a film, you know, around the world, they swash it down into a film size. Okay. And we went to Sundance and for the trip to Italy, and they're doing that bit, and Steve did a superb, forensically accurate impression of Frankie Howard as we're walking down a street, right? And the camera's behind us, and he's going, oh, no, yes, the lava, oh, the lava! And it's so good, right? And we were sat there in this big theatre for there was the show, premiere showing of it, and we're getting great laughs all the way through. It's going well. Oh, it is. And and then we get to this bit. Because they thought he was having a stroke or something, you know, because they wouldn't know who Frankie was, you know. So that came out. That got edited
that
out then.
That probably should have gone before.
Of the film version, yeah.
So, you're going on tour with... I mean, yes,
I am.
What I like about your career, as well as everything in it...
It's the audacity of it.
No, I mean, it's...
I mean, what you've done with so little...
What's interesting is the first big success you have is the
Shopping Channel,
the Human Remains, and
when you were selling those lawnmowers,
and Keith Barrett.
Yes,
and these are very cutting edge comedy. These are working with Coogan and Julia Davis. That's what most comedy actors are kind of aiming for. They think, if I get there,
that's
all I'll do, and I'll just do that forever.
That's right.
And what I like about you is that you're very happy to straddle every element of the show business.
I love to straddle.
So, but you do proper light entertainment stuff. Mm-hmm. You do edgier light entertainment stuff, and it's great to see someone, you know, that's not going like, that's my box, and I'm going to stay in that box, and I'm happy to do the panel shows, and I'm happy to do the silly stuff.
Well, thank you. I mean, I hope that all those things are good examples of their sort. You know, I think Would I Lie to You is you know, up there with the best it's panel really shows. I really do, and I'm proud of it. And what else do I do? other things, you know. I've always liked all these things, you see. When I was a kid, I used to watch Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, who you would say were edgy and wonderful. Although I heard you talking to Pete Bainham, saying that you were talking about Arthur. It was okay, but it wasn't great. You said the best thing he did was all the Derek and Clive stuff. See, I that's great. It's great, but I prefer, if I could only have one lot, I would go for their Pete and Dud stuff over Derek and Clive, if I had to. It's never going to happen. I'm never going to be forced. But I had a gun to my head, you know, a strange set of circumstances. But I liked all that, but I also used to love watching Des O'Connor. I used to love watching Bruce Forsyth hosting the Generation Game. I could see the comedic value of Bruce Forsyth in the 1970s working without a safety net, inventing stuff. Yeah. Brilliant use of the camera. And all those things. And Barry Humphreys I used to adore and worship. And now what I find is that I think I'm an amalgam of all those things, you know, for better or for worse, you know.
Well, I think that's true, but all the people who are edgy comedians would have loved all those things as well. So, you know, that's the thing is you sort of, maybe you're, you know, I rebelled against Monty Python after a while because you go, I love them so much that you've kind of got to
leave. I never rebelled against anything. We talked about this a little bit backstage. Yeah. I never rebelled against anything. I never thought anything was shite. I never thought, oh, that's wrong and I'm going to tear that down. I was never like that. I was always just, oh, I like that, and I like that, oh, and I quite like to do that. Yeah. Oh, that would be good to do, you know. And the stuff I didn't like, I just ignored. I kind of freeze it out.
Sure.
I can be a bit like that with friendships, I'm afraid. It's not it's not a good quality. It's Claire will say to me, you haven't spoken to him for ages. I go, I'm freezing them out.
But, you know, I think if anyone grew up, and we're sort of a similar age, anyone growing up in the 70s, you're watching Cannon and Ball and Little and Large. And, you know, I remember seeing Cannon and Ball, and I just love so much of Cannon and Ball. I just remember
being... You don't get to do that. You know, I saw them at when my last holiday before, you know, as a family, before you then start having your own holidays, about 84. We were in Torquay and went to see them at the Princess Theatre, Torquay. They were fantastic, crying with laughter. Yeah. Superb.
I went to see Ted Rogers in Weymouth with my friends, and he wasn't. He wasn't very good. Well, to be fair, we ruined the show.
Did you? Yeah, did you heckle him?
We sat in the front row, and there was only about 50 people in there.
Rich, why would you do that?
Well, I'm now older than Ted Rogers was when we did that to Ted Rogers. So,
yeah, that's a weird thing. Here's a good thing to do if you have a bit of time on your hands. Look at some of your favourite artists. Singers, comedians, and look at what they were doing. So Paul McCartney, what was he doing? I'm 53, and you go, my God, he was 53 then. That's really sobering. Yeah. And then you can look at sort of how long you've got left in terms of look at his life and look at what he's done since then. You know.
Yeah. Well, a lot, you know, and you pass people who are dead.
Yes.
Quite, you know, all the time. You go, oh my God, I'm older than. I mean, we're both a lot older than John Lennon. And I think he probably did better than...
Well, Elvis, who I'm often compared to.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it all. Sorry, not Elvis, Anton Dubek. Elvis died at 42. Yeah. I mean, it's unthinkable, you know. Terrible.
I don't like you calling yourself a small man at 5'7".
Well, I think it's a funny thing. I get people who come up to me and they say, oh my God, you're tiny. Every voice tonight is going to be West Country, right? Because, God, you're tiny, aren't you? And then I'll get others who go, oh, you're not short at all. It's a curious height. I mean, in Wales, it's perfectly average, I would say. What are you then?
I'm 5'7".
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, you seem taller than me backstage. No. You did insist on standing on that plinth, though.
I did, I went. I'm very pretty. You know, I'm happy to be this height.
Oh, listen, I've got used to it.
Would you be? I was asking Adam Adam Buxton, who's small too.
Indeed.
Properly small.
I think he's smaller than me.
He's
isn't
a tiny.
There aren't many that are smaller than me, so I savour them.
He would really like to be tall. I don't. I mean,
would he? Would he? Would he?
Would you like to be tall?
Not really. I mean, to what
They're
end?
All pricks,
I mean,
aren't they? The tall ones.
I think if you haven't kind of accepted how you are at 53, you really are in trouble, you know. If you haven't come to terms with it by then ooh. You haven't, have you?
Yeah, I haven't. I want to be thin, I want to be young. I just want to stay young.
Do they have organised classes at this gym? Because I think that might be the answer. You know, maybe if there was just somebody up at the front, you know, telling you what to do.
You stay very fit.
I have. More so as I've got older, yeah.
I've seen you with your top off in...
in Gavin and Stacey. That was when I had a trainer then, an Australian guy called Arthur. And Arthur was one of those classic trainers that just concentrated on the upper body, right?
Right.
So he had great pecs and arms, and it was all this bloody stuff. And for a while, I was in really good shape, but my legs were withered, you know. But yes, and we did that.
I'm the opposite, because I like running, so my legs are good. So between the two of us, we could make a fantastic short man.
But I think as you get older, I think mentally as well, it keeps me on a level playing field and happier, you know, if I feel alert and you know, at the moment I'm on a bit of a kick at the moment where I'm doing a fair bit of stuff,
yeah.
And I feel so much better, so much more energized. Did you get this? I was starting to drift off at meals or meeting up with friends, and I'd be sat at the table and it would be all right for about 40 minutes for an hour, and I would just become one of those guys who goes like this. And I thought, Jesus, I've got no bloody energy. I've just, you know, just no energy. So I started to you know, work out a bit and some cardio and some stuff like that. And the difference is astonishing. Amazing.
Yeah. Because I've got young kids. It's been
me
very,
too,
it's
me
been,
too.
Yeah. Well, how old's your youngest?
Well, I've got five. They are right. 24, 22, 19, 10 and 7.
Yeah. In Wales, that's kind of less children than normal. That's everyone in Wales.
That's a Scotland joke, isn't it?
They're very fecund in Wales. Chris Evans, not that one from here. He's got about 500 kids.
All right. Well, five is enough, I think. Yeah, I think I'm calling it a day now.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Never know.
No, really. No,
never
I do
say
know.
Never.
No, I have said never.
Have you tied the tubes?
Oh, no, we were talking about that at the weekend. I went away with some friends for a little mini break.
Yeah.
And one of them has done... Has one of them done that? I don't know. We were talking about it. Anyway, if you ever read... I read Richard Madeley's autobiography.
Oh, yes.
Because I had Richard and Judy on the Keith Barrett show, so you know, I do my research, of course. And he writes the most eye-watering account of his vasectomy. It's not like Richard to go into intimate details, is it? Richard wrote with great, you know, he really communicated. He had a horrific one.
Yeah.
And the way it went wrong. And the way he describes the pain, you would never, ever go through with it after that. But it can go well, can't it?
It can go well if you don't want more kids, but, you know, you're in constant pain.
But you can have it done without too much pain, yeah. I think. But I know so many people who've had it done, and it's been incredibly painful.
Don't do it yourself. That's my advice. Don't try it. Just go to a proper doctor to do that.
Rather than doing it at home.
Yeah. Go to a vasectomy doctor. One who specialises in that vas deferens.
I saw a picture the other day, came up on a Instagram or something, of a doctor, this is probably a famous picture, operating on himself. So they got all the sheets. It's giving himself an appendectomy, you know, and they take it out. Yeah, you remember when Rambo sewed up his own arm in First Blood? But that, of course, was acting.
Well, you came close. You came close on that ladder to doing it yourself at a young age. Yeah, I mean, that was what I was thinking.
My mum and dad took me to hospital, and, you know, if you'd
been a few inches to the right on
good
that
Lord.
Ladder.
Oh, good Lord.
That could have been, you know, no kids, definitely.
I'm trying to think if there's anything insane.
Five Welsh
more
children.
Than a few inches to the. Well, there's nothing in that. It doesn't make any sense. You're going to think you'd laugh at it and then go, what?
That's fine. As long as you get the laugh, it's fine.
No, I don't like those jokes. I don't like those jokes when someone does something and the rhythm is all there, right? And you get the laugh. And then I come away going, yeah, but hang on a minute. Because actually, and I reckon you know that as well.
But it's interesting. You've done stand-up, but you didn't start as a stand-up.
No, I didn't. No, I came to it quite late.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came to writing quite late. This is an odd thing. I didn't have the confidence. I said to you backstage, you had a voice very young. Stuff you were doing with Stuart and you did the Mary Whitehouse thing. You were so young, you know. What?
I didn't do that, but I did On the Hour.
That was you, wasn't it?
Didn't do Mary Whitehouse. We did Fist of Fun.
Fist of Fun. And Pete Bainham was on that. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, right. So I'm not senile. but you had a voice and you knew what you wanted to say. When I was that age, I would, you know, perform and, you know, la la la, but I didn't have any angle or attitude, and I certainly didn't want to destroy anything, even with a small D. Because in a lot of, you know, there was an attitude and a sort of slight anger to it. I didn't have that at all. And so writing, the thought of writing would never have occurred to me. That was something other people did. And it took me a long time to sort of... and now I don't write much. I had a period when I did write.
Yeah.
And I quite enjoyed it. And now I don't.
Are you right? Are you doing what with the stand-up?
But sort of it's more by osmosis. You know, I'll go on stage with a few ideas, I'll record it, and I'll come back and I'll see what works and I'll write it down. But I to keep it fairly loose. Although over the course of a tour, it kind of solidly crystallizes, and you try. You're always assertive of that elusive, ultimate way to do it. So I write in that sense, but not in the proper way, really.
Well, it's hard writing. You know, I still do quite a lot of writing, but it's hard and thankless and difficult to get stuff made.
With that, I've been really lucky. This thing of getting stuff made, I haven't tried to get anything made. For you know, I got the Would I Lie to You rolls on. Touch wood. I hope it will continue. The trip comes round every few years, and then I get offered things. I'm not driven. I'm not pushing. You know, if it just stays, I don't want it to get any less. But if it stayed like this, I'm the happiest bunny in the thing. You know, so I'm not striving to get anything made. You know, I'm just like, you know.
Well, you say I think I talked about, you know, wanting to spend time with your family, which is rather than
to do that,
which is a sensible.
Well, that's what makes you happy, isn't it? Yeah, more than any job. Or any work. You go, I went to a thing the other night in the on the press line. So, what are you excited about? Well, nothing to do with work. I mean, you know, we're going to Oman at the weekend. I'm looking forward to that for a holiday, you know. But seriously, I love work. I love doing it. But I don't think that's where happiness lies, you know. Because you're going to end up going, oh, they do. And that's never bothered me. I never had to be number one.
No.
Happy to be about number six or number seven.
Yeah.
Stay in the top 10. Nice.
It's true, but you know, what we were saying backstage, it is. Well, I'd forgotten that Angus Deaton did the first two series of Would I Lie to You?
He did, yeah.
Because the team's so established now, and you've done a lot of series of it, so it's been you for a long time. But that's, you know, the things, that's, I suppose, the thing, when you have that hanging over, you go, oh, they just got rid of Angus Deaton. But I don't think they would do that now. Unless you get found with, you know.
You don't know, you never know. I mean, but that with Angus, that was nothing to do with any...
No.
That was just, they just wanted to change, you know, I was the lucky person that was...
If they were going to get rid of one of the people from Would I Lie to You...
I think it'd be me.
It would be you.
Yeah. Well, they sure as hell wouldn't give it to you. I'm sorry, I felt I had to come back with something, Rich. I felt it was a little below the belt what you did, and I had to offer something back.
I can't even get on it. I can't even get on to lie on it.
I know. Rich.
A good liar.
I know. Now, come on, it's been lovely. Why does it have to descend to this? I'm instinctively liking you.
Everyone's,
let's just have a nice
everyone,
time.
It's a brilliant team. That's what I mean. You are safe with that, as long as the show survives, and you're safe. You know, but it's a.
But Richard said we were safe.
That's
Richard Herring. He said he was. What are you talking about? It's not been. But Richard Herring told me. It's Rob. Have you heard?
If I got news for you still going on in 25 years, you'll still be going in 25 years.
No, you never know.
It's better than if I got news for you, isn't it?
That's a very subjective opinion, isn't it? I mean, it all depends on what. That's like saying bananas are better than oranges.
No, it's better.
Maybe you like them more. But yeah, it's better.
It's a fantastic show. Who's your favourite? Is Bob Morty your favourite?
Yeah, Bob. I love Bob. Watch the episodes. Look at me when Bob's on and I'm in love.
Yeah.
So he's always next to Lee over there, and I'm in here in the middle. Watch me, and I'm like this. I'd love him. Everybody does, though. Everybody loves Bob, and what he does is amazing. I do that looking thing. I did a thing. This ties in with you saying I do lots of different things. I did a big show for children in need at Wembley Arena with Tom Jones, right, who I adore, right? And we sang a song. We've done a few songs together over the years. How did that happen? And we wanted a sincere song, a So we did Smile, Though Your Heart Is Breaking. So we'd rehearsed it, and we sing it in front of however many thousand people, and we're on stools in that classic style. And he's where you are, and I do the first bit. Smile, though your heart is breaking, you'll get by. And then he comes in, if you smile with your tears. And amazing, you know. So where do you look? You know, what do you do, you know? Because I'd normally do funny things where there's always a glint in the eye or something. So I'm going like this. And I'm aware, I'm going, don't stare at him. And then I saw him a few months later at another thing, and I said, oh, I really enjoyed that thing with you. He goes, oh yeah, it was good, you know. And I said, you know, we're doing that song. I said, I didn't know where to look. And he said, I know. Huh. He goes, it's always... he said, it's always difficult when you're singing with a fella.
Very good. And you became friends with lots of the people that you had looked up to, obviously. And, like, you know, there's also stories about you and Ronnie Corbett.
Yeah.
How did you and Ronnie Corbett actually become friends?
Well,
I want to know.
I met him at some BBC function with Ronnie B as well.
Right.
And I'd always gravitated more to Ronnie C. I always gravitated more towards Dudley more than Peter Cook. I don't know if it's a height thing, but I think it's a warmth thing.
Yeah.
I could see more of myself in Ron and in people like that, you know, as opposed to the aloof, you know, that great thing in Bedazzled where Peter Cook is going, I want to be alone, and the other, love me, you know, I was never a I want to be alone guy. So I gravitated more to Ron. So I met him at that, and I do remember, funnily enough, one of my kids was going to be christened, and you had to go to a christening class or something, and another parent was related to Ron somehow and knew me because I'd done Marion and Jeff and him, and I said, oh, my uncle or cousin or something is Ronnie Corbett. I said, oh. So we go to this thing, and Ronnie Ancona, another Ronnie, introduced me to the two Ronnies. I thought, wow, this is exciting, you know, because I was a huge fan. And Ronnie Corbett said, oh, now you're the... Yes, he said, now you met my so-and-so, didn't you? Oh, wonderful. He said you were very nice. And I said, oh, that's lovely, lovely. And Human Remains had been out to some acclaim. You know, we'd won awards and things. And Ronnie Barker said, ah, yes, you're the chap from Human Remains, aren't you? I said, yes. Yes, I've seen three of them. And I thought, okay, here comes the compliment. And he said, you should tell that girl that does it. She shouldn't always play dowdy. Straight on the phone to Julia. You'll love this. So that's where I met Ron. And then I was touring my Keith Barrett live show. And I was going to be at the Fairfield Halls, Croydon. And they used to live in Addington, near there. And I get told, Ron's asked for tickets. He's going to come. Oh, that's exciting, right? So this tour was going just fine. And we get there. I can remember it clearly. And I'm on the stage doing the sound check, and I'm thinking, oh, God alive, Ronnie Corbett's going to be watching me. That's the first time well-known people come to see you, it's a little... Billy Connolly came once, and I didn't... Thank God I didn't know until after the show, and I thought it was a dreadful show. It was a Saturday night, midway through the run in the West End. Saturday nights can be tricky because it's the people's big night. Thursday or a Friday is better. And I came off thinking that was a pile of poo. And my tour manager used to call me Sir. He said, Sir, Billy Connolly was in tonight. I went, oh, no. Anyway, he did like it, but that's by the by. So I know Ronnie is coming, right? And I'm on stage, and I was nervous at the sound check. So to calm myself down, I told one of his jokes. You know, I said, my great uncle Arthur died at the Battle of Little Bighorn. He said, he wasn't involved in the fighting. He was camping in a nearby field and popped over to complain about the noise. And I told that on the stage as a way to calm myself down. So we get to the show, and I'm doing the show, right? And I'm not great. My timing's a little off because I'm nervous, right? Yeah. And I'm nervous, and I'm doing the gag. Oh, it's not so good. And I get to a joke, and thank God, I can hear from the darkness. And I thought, oh, thank God for that. And then it went okay. So after the show, then I had a lot of people there that night. There were people from like the DVD company. There were some people from the BBC. There were people from the promoters. And then Ron and Anne, his wife, came into the dressing room. And I end up just talking to Ron, you know. But people are looking over all the time. And we just hit it off. We got on really well. And I said, oh, I was so nervous. I said, you know, that in the sound check, I did that old joke of yours. Oh, which one? I said, the one. And I start telling it. And it all went quiet because people are going, oh, he's doing him to him. And I said, my great uncle, the guy with the bad little bighorn, and Ron's just watching like this. And I said, he wasn't involved in the fighting. He was camping in a nearby field. And then Ron jumped in and went and popped over to complain about the noise. And he was lovely. And then I got to know him, and he came to our wedding. He came to my 40th. He was lovely, and Anne, his wife, and they would come to see me.
He drove you in a golf cart so you could get.
Well,
to
yeah,
your
when my
child.
When Tom, my son Tom, was born, it was the first child with Claire, with my second wife, and she was nine. All my children previous to that had been late, so I said to Claire, "Look, there's no way. Obviously, my sperm they take their time, yeah. Right? So don't you worry." So it was 9 days before the due date, and I played golf with Ron. It was the only time I did. And he had a house that backed onto the golf course and his own buggy. It's like he had a bat cave, you know, and he would drive out in this. And we're playing, and then Claire phones. She said, I think it's happening. He goes, well, we better get you home. And we get into the buggy and we go home. Yeah. And he was lovely to me, and he would phone me up, you know, when he'd seen me on the telly and say nice things. So, you know, nothing but lovely memories.
It's great. It's lovely when that baton is passed down the generations, isn't it? You know, I think it's. But again, it's because he recognises the respect.
I remember saying, I said to Barry Humphries, because a lot of the stuff I do in my live show and I'm talking to the audience is very, you know, from a template set by Barry Humphries, and I'm sure before Barry, you know. And I said to him once, I said, oh God, you know, so much of what I do when I'm talking to people in the audience, he said, is, I learned from you, really, thinking he might say, oh, what are you doing? I mean, what's it? And he went, it's wonderful that the someone is carrying the torch.
Yeah.
I thought, what a lovely... But I think, I find that in comedians. I think that, as you... We talked a bit about this to me backstage, but I don't see much of the cattiness and the bitchiness. I mean, I'm aware it's there, but I see in my circles a lot of supporting and, you know, and a lot of encouraging. And
yeah, well, that's it. You know, I think mostly Tim Vine gave me that joke that I did before the show, and, you know, it's that you're trying to help each other out and make things better, and, yeah, everyone's working to some kind of formula. Even the people who are saying this is here's the formula, they're still using the same tricks, you know.
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's a there's a technical thing to it, and I think real comedians recognise when another comedian is. You know, I mean, if someone's like ripping someone off,
that's different. I always say with that, I don't know anybody who would do that, because the thought of I used to do a bit about what was it, leaving messages on answer phones or something. I mean, it's a pretty generic, you know, route one thing to do. And I did a thing about people's voices at the end of calls going, okay, see you later, bye-bye. And then I saw an advert for one of Michael McIntyre's DVDs, and he was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And clearly had done it before me, and my blood froze. I thought, oh my God, this is going to look like, and maybe I had heard it, because you don't know. Maybe
don't
it just
know,
got
but me. I think also like those observations,
that's, but I was mortified.
Yeah,
by
yeah.
That.
But that's but anyone, you know, if you go, you see it, you go, oh, I won't do it, or if it's different enough, you go, you ask permission to do it. But that's the thing, you know, that if you're doing that, that's why observational comedy is so hard, and that's why those guys who can do it are so great.
Yes,
because
yes,
you're trying to get things that are common experiences, but that no one's expressed before. So, you know, if you're all looking in the
and
same
place.
And then
it's how you express it, the economy, that's what Michael is. Yeah. And he gets flack in some quarters, but my God, you know, he's his ability to take something and crystallize it and communicate it with incredible economy to a massive range of people is stunning. I used to have a bit about there was a bit I had, and it would fly maybe twice out of seven or eight times, you know, and I didn't know why it would fly when it did. I couldn't work it out. I remember telling him about it, and he goes, "Oh, that's a wonderful thing. Are you doing it? And I said, "Well, I can't make it work." He said, "Oh, can I? I said, because he is not, you know, as if anyone could have had the thought. And I don't know if he has gone on to do it, but I have no doubt that he would communicate that just, you know, brilliantly.
Yeah. He's very very, very hard man to follow, which no one has to do anymore, thank God, because he just does his own things. But he was absolutely, he did compare a lot, and he was so good, it was difficult for any of the acts to...
Yeah.
And everyone loved him so much as well.
But you know what? The other thing about him is his work ethic is my God, does he work?
Yeah.
You know, I remember when he was hosting the Royal Variety one year, he told me how many warm-up gigs he'd done. It's like 30-something. If I ever hosted the Royal Variety, I'd spend an afternoon with some writers, choose the ones I liked and give it a shot. And I know I'd end up doing Ronnie Corbett.
Well, look, I would love to talk to you more. Maybe if you would like to come back another time, and we'll see.
But, I'd love to. I've really enjoyed this.
It's been really good fun having you here. Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause, Rob Brydon! You have been listening to Rahalaskapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Rob Brydon. The music is, as always, by Pest. Thank you to everyone at Acast, everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, and everyone at Go Faster Strike for all their help in producing these wonderful podcasts. I'm indebted to my producer, Gwyn Rhys-Davies. And Ben Walker is also off doing something else. He likes his other podcasts, but he'll have done some editing or something. So well done to him, the idiot. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStrike.com production. Why not go to rahalaskapa.co.uk to find out all about upcoming gigs, how to become a monthly badger and help us make more of these and get ad-free podcasts if that's your thing. And lots of more stuff, richherring.com/gigs if you want to see where I'm coming with this podcast in 2019/2020/2021. We'll see if the world gets that far. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.